As the 2023 general elections draw nearer, there are three major subjects that seem to have divided Nigerians: religion, ethnicity, and leader competence. What should be more important? What should citizens prioritize at this time? These and more on this week's episode of The Insider with my guest, Mr. Leye Komolafe, a public affairs analyst. Do enjoy. Thank you very much for joining on this episode, Mr. Leye. So, looking at what has been happening so far, 2023 is fast approaching, election year is coming fast, and a lot of things are happening all at the same time. Crazy things, a lot of discussions, a lot of argument. But there's a major argument right now, which is the issue of religion, especially with what happened. You know, we have a presidential candidate who had to, you know, choose and select the same religion, which has sparked about several discussions, argument. Some are saying, no, leave religion, let's look at what they can do, competence. Some are saying, how would you be doing same religion when Nigeria is a secular state? But first of all, let me get your reaction to that.
Well, I think we can approach the question from two dimensions. First is about those who think that religion is central, or religious sensitivity is central to discussions on leadership. And secondly, you also have those who would say, well, it is immaterial to what leadership is. So I belong to the second category of people. I do not think that the faith or the religious inclination, the inexistence of it, that even if you don't want to be a religious person, I do not think that should be a yardstick, or that should color whether or not one an individual could be a good leader. I don't think that should be a bone of contention. However, it is based on certain foundational and existential problem of Nigeria that the question of religion comes into play. So also within that structure of the four set of people that I talked about who think that religion is central, you have those who feel that it is due to the marginalization of a particular group, or presumed marginalization of a particular group, that the whole idea of having a balance of force comes into play regarding faith. And the second set of people also will be willing to play the card of, well, at least we're in the majority. So as long as we're in the majority, we can always use our faith as the basis for deciding who becomes our leader. So for the person who wants to pick, say, a Muslim ticket at the federal level, maybe doing some calculation, political calculation of where would these numbers come from? Where would the votes come from?
Okay.
You know, that
the number game now.
Number game. Where do you have the position of voters? And how are they likely to vote? So that is where you want someone who wants to play the Muslim ticket. Then if you then take that back also, say, take it to the regional space, or take it to the state level. In a state highly dominated by the Christian faith, right? So you also find those who wouldn't mind flouting a Christian card based on that idea of, if I decide to pick a Muslim as my running mate, how would this really gel with those voters whose number I really need to win this election? So that is where the home is. It doesn't also mean that, even in the South also, you won't also see where Muslim tickets would draw. But it's oftentimes first about the game of number, and secondly about the perception of domination, that a particular faith is about to dominate the particular state of the country. So those are the things. But left to me, I do not care, even if you are not even religious, as long as you can be a good leader, that is what.
Before I move on to competence, for example, would you say that a certain kind of religion has been marginalized?
Well,
going by the history of Nigeria,
this is a very tricky one, right? So even those who claim that you cannot have same faith tickets are also playing the card of binary, you know, lumping everyone up into two religions, that is Christianity and Islam. Within their own constructs, they have already eliminated or sidelined countless other indigenous religions within the country. And they're still there. You have those who don't subscribe to these two dominant religions. So if any faith is really marginalized in that sense of the central government or the central units of the country, it will be those that do not belong to the Christian or the Muslim dichotomy, which they are creating to be the sense of whether faith is going to be marginalized during election or not. So you have Southern Christians now screaming or pushing that argument of, no, you cannot have a Muslim certificate. Where do you live with the other faith? When they see other faith, they are talking about Christianity. They're not even talking about about the other indigenous religions. Because even the person who is flying the Muslim certificate for the game of number, if they ask him to then drop the running mate and pick from another faith, because of the argument of game of number, that person is not likely to pick from the indigenous religions.
So it's all about game of numbers as far as Nigerian politics is concerned. So where does the place of competence actually come in? Yes, you've made your point that religion doesn't necessarily mean that someone can be competent or incompetent. But looking at a person's history, how can we tell that this person is competent enough? Even if by the virtue of our secular nature of Nigeria, we can say, okay, maybe it's not so bad. Let's look at what it can do. So what then does qualify as far as competence is concerned, most especially at the federal level?
Well, a number of people, or many people who want to talk about the Nigerian political landscape, would not even start with the argument of competence. The same way the Constitution does not stipulate competence. It stipulates eligibility. Are you eligible to contest in the first instance? That is what the Constitution says. And so you'd find those who are going to latch onto that to say, well, is this person qualified to run for office or not? Those sort of people are there. They're going to push them.
Right.
Then when it comes to competence, when it comes to the notion of the idea of competence, that shouldn't competence then play a huge role in determining who becomes the leader of a country? They see that as a secondary matter. And it is very important. That is where the whole idea of campaign and manifesto ought to play out, right? In the build up to the election. So that we listen to you. Even if you are not experienced, or some person will say, oh, this person is experienced, he has been the governor for a particular period, this person has been the senator, this person has been the deputy governor, this person that, you know, looking at that idea of experience in terms of holding public office, not experience in terms of competence. There's experience in terms of having been an occupant of public office in the past. They consider that experience. But that is what we see more as the argument of experience. Meanwhile, competence goes beyond that. But the focus oftentimes is not really on competence, on about how well did he perform,
when the result that was delivered
when you had this office. So you find a CV of someone's, you say you had been governor for 8 years, you had been in the Senate, say 2 terms, you had been a minister. So by resume, this person is more qualified than others. But we're talking about the competence of that individual. So how do you judge competence? So if you claim to have this resume, then we should be able to trace, and then understand and critique what you have done in the last number of years that you have been holding public portfolio in the country. And I think that's, we could start the argument of competence from there. But for someone who is not experienced at all in leadership, in that sense of having spent a number of years in, say, in a public office, then that is where the argument of scrutinizing you based on your manifesto comes in. We should be able to ask questions, deep questions, because we want to know your understanding of matters, right? So, like what happened in 2015, you know, when the current president was produced, the argument of competence wasn't there. It was the argument of he had been a leader for a particular number of years in the past, haven't been in the military for a number of years,
he should be able to
tackle insecurity. But we didn't ask. Nigerians didn't bother to ask, or many Nigerians didn't bother to ask. Some of us did, but we didn't have the live microphone at the time. Some of us did ask those questions, that how exactly do you want to tackle this? How exactly do you want to tackle corruption? Because I remember the president to be, then he was campaigning then, made a reference to global oil price, and he said he was going to stabilize that. You know, I knew that was an unwise comment, you know, because you do not even know how the global price of crude oil is regulated by market forces. So you don't even have an understanding of how that occurs. Yet your dossier, right? Your dossier as having been a military head of state and having been an army general for a while was then what people pushed for. So that goes back to that idea of not looking at competence in terms of what we have, but looking at experience. And the aspect of
if I move on to how Nigerians should critique upcoming leaders, another card is on the table, the ethnic card. You know, so we have the ethnic, the religious, the other one, the competence card. Now the ethnic part is coming. So for most people in the North, it has been assumed, because as far as I'm concerned, we don't have enough statistics to prove that, but majority of people say that, you know, people in the North, there are Muslims in the North. So even having to have, first of all, someone who is from that side and to even having as a Muslim is wrong. So how do we put all this in a mix? What do we do to separate this to ensure that we are doing the right thing?
It is a sad one, really, that in the 21st century Nigeria, the ethnic card is still being played. You know, when we're talking about electioneering, it's a really sad one. And when you add religion into the mix, and then you have an overbloated expectation, you know, which may not necessarily be fulfilled eventually when these people come, when people emerge as leaders. Because if the ethnic card is played maximally, then it will no longer be a matter of whether an individual is competent or not competent. It's going to be a matter of it belongs to this ethnic lineage. Therefore, we are going to vote for him en masse. So competence is already sacrificed. It would have been a different thing altogether. Say if you have qualified candidates, they are all qualified, right?
If they By constitution, they are qualified.
But I'm talking about competence now.
Okay.
If you have competent individuals who are vying for these offices, competent, I think that would essentially limit the whole argument of ethnic, say, inclination. I think it would limit. Mm. It would, because if our political debate over time has been about competence, has been about track record of leaders.
Results.
I think the ethnic card would be less played.
We're saying that on the table of competence, there are some things that won't show up.
Yeah, if we have competence, if competence had been the basis for our political debates and our political culture, I think the ethnic card wouldn't be played. Even if it's going to be played, it would be reduced drastically because competence would then be the basis, you know, for picking leaders.
Still looking on the perspective of ethnicity, so one major argument is that some people have held on to this power. A particular region of the country has held on to this power for years. Why don't we just try someone else from another region? And that will be a fair game, seeing that Nigeria is multicultural, it is multi-religious.
Yes, I agree with that point. But I think we should have started the entire thing with proper restructuring, right? So allow the component units of the federal structure to have high level of autonomy, right? I think this was tried earlier, the time of regional government. It does not mean that a particular part may not feel sidelined at some point in time, right? But it wouldn't be as perennial as we have it now.
Mm.
Now, PDP used to have, when it drafted the constitution, used to have this clause which gave, which it called the zoning formula, that once power gets a particular place, it has to be rotated.
Yes.
But in the build-up to this election, in the build-up to the primary election of this year, that particular clause was presumably suspended to say, well, we are going to use merit and not zoning. I will know what that merit means. Merit does not mean merit. Merit does not mean merit in that sense. Because if it were to be really about merit, then the entire zoning formula shouldn't have been part of the constitution, of the constitution of the party in the first instance. But I think also that those who drafted that constitution saw the danger of leaving, because democracy is a game of number, of leaving everything blank in that sense of anybody can vie within their party. Now, I'm talking about the logic of creating that within the party. I'm not talking about whether that should be the yardstick for the general space. But as if you do not have a zoning pattern and you have created a party which has a massive presence in the northern part of the country, that invariably the flag bearer of your party would come from the north almost every time. That would be the resulting factor. But by bringing in the clause of zoning into it, you have already eliminated the possibility of continual domination of a particular part of the
country,
of the country within the party, right? Within the party, and then perhaps also in the general elections. But regarding why not zone this to a particular space that has never been present, well, that is a very complex one. Because you don't have to decide, is it about competence? You are going back to the initial question. Is it now about competence, or is it about ethnic affiliation, or what exactly are we going to push? But if you want to operate by the logic of what has been the basis for judging Nigerian political structure over time, then I would say, if that's the logic, we want the logic to run through, then I would say that a region that has never been produced, you know, should actually be allowed to produce the next president. I would push for that. That a region that has never should be allowed to produce, because you do not want that sense of domination. We know that the democracy is a game of number. And if a particular region has that massive number, it would always determine who becomes the president. And I'm not sure that is that simple majoritarian rule, which now favors a particular region above others every time, should be the best way to judge how to do
We're still going to get to this issue of competence, because it's always springing up, because now we've said that, okay, if I had to look at Nigeria's political history, and then, okay, we should actually look at the fact that, okay, the ones that have produced it should do that. But before then, you made mention of restructuring.
Yes.
I remember that last year, this was like a major issue, coupled with the fact that we had so many secessionists rising up. You know, some said it's time for Yoruba Nation. Some said it's time for Indigo to take their place. And it's the question of true federalism and, you know, restructuring kept coming up. But it looked like the administration, this current administration, didn't look into that. In fact, it was like a topic that never sprung up from their own end. In your own view, would you say restructuring will work? And if it will work, what are we actually restructuring?
Yes, I do not want to lump the secessionist movement with the idea of restructuring, okay, because they are two different things, right? So you could have restructuring without necessarily having ethnic coloration, without necessarily having ethnic coloration. But the a number of separatist movements are riding on the back of the us, you know, or the us of ethnicity. But if you're talking about restructuring, we're talking about having semi-autonomous components units. It could be regional. It could be based on, say, well, we use geopolitical zone. It could be, well, make it the north versus the south, or when you have those two, you cannot divide once again and all that. It could take any form. But if restructuring is properly done, ethnicism would be reduced. You know, this activation of one's ethnic group for fulfilling one's self or self-interest or selfish desires, you know, which I think is what a number of separatist movements are actually trying to do with the whole idea of creating Yoruba Nation, creating a Yoruba Republic, or creating a Biafra and all that. Because even within those spaces, you may not necessarily take care. They may not necessarily take care of the minority groups who are within
the groups.
The landscape they are trying to carve
which
out
could also probably nation. Cause another uprising from within that group.
It would most likely create an uprising. But I think restructuring would have settled a number of things, you know, from that. Because once you restructure properly, you've already doused the tension or the fears of domination. That's what happened. I mean, fear of domination would have been. So those who would rather latch on to the ethnic card to clamor for, say, I mean, the Dua Republic, and wouldn't even have that clout to gather a number of persons to support their cause. Because the question that will be asked is, oh well, the system is running efficiently, so why really do you need a Dua Republic, or why do you need a Biafra Republic if the system is running efficiently?
So when you look at Nigeria again, you will over and over again, we see that it's quite a complex country which has brought about complex problems, and you can't solve this one without solving this one, without solving that other one, because somehow they just seem to connect. But now that we are talking about competence, what kind of questions should Nigerians be asking as far as competence is concerned? And you've helped us to actually diversify to say that there's competence in terms of, you know, experience, which is common in this part of the world, where we just look at, okay, this guy has been the governor for 8 years, he has been the president for, you know, as you can see his experience. But there's part of experience in terms of how was he able to handle the problems, you know. And Nigeria is one that is daily, especially now, we now have this continuous compound complex problem, as people like to call it. So what is the question of competence? What defines competence?
Thank you. In a democratic space, competence for me would be to pick a leader who first and foremost, at least at the foundational level, understands the ideals of democracy.
Ideals of democracy.
The ideals of democracy.
Sorry, before you go on, can we even say we have a strong democracy? Can we even say we are practicing proper democracy in Nigeria?
Well, Nigeria is practicing a pseudo-democracy.
Pseudo-democracy.
Pseudo-democracy. And you also have many flawed democracy across the globe. So the hub of democracy, you know, presumed hub of democracy, for instance, the US, has been characterized as a flawed democracy, you know, in terms of looking for, if you're looking for strong democracies in the world, in terms of those countries that really understand the ideas of democracy, you more likely look to the Nordic countries first, and then you look to some parts of Europe, even before you talk about the US. Unfortunately, Nigeria builds his own idea of democracy, you know, of course, because of the influence, pop culture influence on the American nation. There is democracy in practice, and there is democracy in theory. Theoretical democracy is where I am concerned first, because it is when you get the theoretical foundations right that they begin to practicalize. So, not to see democracy as a mere game of number, which is what Nigerians see democracy as at the point in time, but you see that from that angle of, what if I am a citizen in a country, what should be the benefits? So what is the idea of citizenship, for instance, that's there? What is your understanding of the notion of free speech, freedom of expression, free speech, freedom of expression? And free speech in the sense of having conversations, constant conversations on how we want to be governed, or having constant
conversations on how we want
to be governed. So I consider that as one of the ideals of democracy. And then the notion of citizenship, right? So I should be seen first and foremost as a citizen, and not as a subject of a leader, which is what the Nigerian Democrats, a number of Nigerian Democrats, or many Nigerian Democrats think, you know, democracy is all about. To say, well, the president has spoken, and that is it. Or the governor has spoken, and that's it. But I say, no. A citizen in a democracy is not what you have, say, like what you have as a subject in a monarchy. So, but if you don't understand, if we don't start from understanding the historical foundation of democracy, then we'll keep getting it wrong.
So which even means that the ordinary, common Nigerian has to have this understanding of what true democracy is. And I feel that sometimes Nigerians don't get the idea of democracy. The idea is democracy just be about, it's the voice of the people, which of course is basic. But like I've highlighted on this basic that ideas of democracy in theory and in practice, which means that there should be some things that we should be deeper questions rather than just say, who the people have the voice. But continue.
In fact, constant questioning of the space. So within that same space of free speech, you could have separationists who want to renegotiate their existence within a space. It is part of democratic ideals. We welcome that questioning as long as it's still within their rights to express it. And they have that right to express it, right? So they should express it, but not violent, with the respect for the other person. So in a democracy, separationists can exist, or would be separationists can exist, but they exist in terms of constant negotiation with the states on whether or not they want to remain in the union. That is part of what democracy is. Constant question.
So back to the question of how then do we define competence? So the first one is that we must have a leader who understands the ideals of democracy. Still dwelling on this. So how then do we scrutinize some of these our candidates to know who understands the ideal of democracy? What kind of questions should we ask them?
Simple. We're asking them, what is your idea of citizenship? We ask that. We ask them important questions on freedom of expression.
Freedom.
What do you see as freedom? In fact, up to those areas of national that they think are untouchable. We ask them about all sorts, about homosexual rights. We ask them, we say, okay, if you become the president, would you make a move? Is it likely for you to make a move to overturn, or can you find a way to sponsor a bill to overturn, you know, the state's position on criminalizing homosexuality? Because these are part of the question that you're asking. Strong questions. We ask questions on, what is your view on abortion rights? For instance, what do you think? Should people have a right to determine what they do with their body as individuals within a democracy? By that, you already, by asking those solid questions, or those critical questions that they think shouldn't be asked in democracy, that is then when we get to know whether these persons really understand what it means to be a citizen in a country and how not to allow just the ideas of the overwhelming majority to truncate voices, dissenting voices in the national space. Because these voices are also very important. And those are part of what I call the ideas of, or part of the freedom, you know, that forms part of the ideals of democracy.
So in terms of defining competence, so the first one is that a leader must have an ideal perspective to democracy. So what's the next one?
And then we also want to ask you, you're going to be my president for the next 4 years at the minimum. So how are you going to run the economy? Because that's about what determines quite a number of things. You know, to go back to Karl Marx's position, or now the material, you know, is actually the superstructure in that sense. It is the material basis of our existence. That is first and foremost important, right? Before anything, or the material culture dictates the other dimension of our existence. So how do you plan to run the economy? What economic model do you plan to run? How do you see education? You know, what are your views regarding education? What do you want to do in different sectors of our national life? How do you plan to increase political participation? These are important questions that we should ask if we want to be our leaders.
So basically, ask questions on what they think are the ideals of democracy. What model do they want to run? In reviving the economy. So my question now is that, for a citizen to ask these questions, it means that the citizen has a background of foreknowledge of all these concepts. And when you look at the majority, when you engage them, it's almost, I don't have the statistics, but for me personally, it almost looks like, for example, when you talk about economy, for example, do ordinary man, does he even understand what the economy, or is it just that when things are getting high, is when you understand that economy is bad or what?
I think it's the same way the political class also don't understand the economy.
Mm.
Because the president, I mean, we have a CBN governor, right? Who came out openly to say that Naira was being devalued because of the events of Aboki FX. The Aboki FX announcing the exchange rate was part of the reasons why Naira was getting devalued. And then they shut down the website of Aboki FX. And here we are about 9 or 10 months afterwards. And Naira is on the free fall. That a CBN governor could even say that. I mean, one that considers to be
a top
economist. I mean, it's expected that would be one of the coordinating economists of the country. So if the number one economist at the federal level, in that sense of hierarchy, they also understand basic economics of how currency
works.
Then there's a problem also with the political class. So I'm not going to limit that, because I don't want to be condescending to say, well, it is the commoners who don't understand how our economy works.
But you do agree that we need more Nigerians who have basic understanding of this,
course.
So that we can
that's where the competence argument comes in. Yes, if you don't understand how the economy is drawn and you are a CBN governor, it's a problem. If you do not understand the risk of democracy and you are the president, then there's a problem. These are the fundamental issues that I think we have. So how do we start reorienting people regarding how do you reorient at that level, or you seek for those who already have these ideas and then you push them up as a competent individuals who should run the state? I think that would be it. And now to go back to one of the contestants also, who wants to be the president. I think from different conversations, I've tagged him a conservative bookkeeper. In the sense that I think one of the arguments he's pushing for, and this is not to demobilize, this position is not to demobilize voters, right? But it's just a matter of asking critical questions. Who wants to be the president? And then he said, well, as the governor for 8 years, he saved up this amount of money in the government's coffers. And he invested a huge sum of money from the state in his private company, I mean, family company, right? Now, and I want to ask that if you are so efficient as a governor for 8 years, why would you save up resources in the state coffers when there are other aspects of the economy within which you can invest that same amount of money? So are you saying that you were only able to cut down on expenses, which is a good one, which is a good thing to do? You know, our democracy is too expensive to run. I agree. You can cut down on expenses. But to what end? The money saved up, what was it spent on? Did you grow the economy of the state while you were there? Which is wanting to cut down. So to cut down on what keeps coming in and not to improve it is why I would call you, say, a conservative bookkeeper. Because what you have done is to say, well, this is where we're going to spend this money. We're not going to spend this money on a particular one. But did you grow the economy of the state for that period? Which other aspect of the state, of the national life, the life of the state, did you touch while you were there? So these are crazy questions that we should ask this month to the president. Mm-hmm. And for the person who has also been the vice president of the country for 8 years, also needs to ask, you know, this question. And for someone who had been a governor, you know, of the largest economy in the country for 8 years, we should also ask the same questions, you know, for them. I mean, I just picked, you know, some of the front runners.
Yeah.
You know, in the forthcoming elections, we should ask them these questions.
So what about orientation? I so much love how you know brought about the fact that even our political office holders don't even have the right orientation. But then I'm thinking now, could it be that they have the orientation, but they are being held down to do the right thing by some forces that we can't see?
Well, force is relative. So if a governor says he sounds at time because of the superpower, I am not concerned about that superpower. I'm concerned about my own descent within the state.
True.
Whatever power is holding you down is not my business, right?
You promised to say this, must do
that. So I'm going to hold you on, you know, by not delivering your promises. So I am not concerned about forces that are holding you down. Because you know that the forces holding you down are actually holding you down for their own political interest. And you're agreeing to be held down because of your own political interest. In most cases, because of the election, because somebody also wants to go to the Senate, or when you want to be the minister, or you want to toe the party line. So you do not want to step on toes. And I give an example of what happened to the former governor of Lagos State, Ambodi, who was accused of not servicing the party structure. This is not a case for him, that he was an excellent governor, and this is not a case for him. What I'm just talking about, that understanding of whether or not one person wants to toe the party line all through, or wants to be competent as a leader. So that's it. And whether there's some of the party structure, should that diminish the likelihood of that person being a governor or being re-elected as a governor in the state? So these are part of the question we should ask.
So how then do we start orientating our people on what is most important? At least from our conversation now, we've made it clear that, you know, competence, if it's at the front burner, you know, diminishes all other things. So how then do we reorientate Nigerians on how to, you know, select their leaders? Because personally speaking, for me, I don't think Nigeria is in a good state. Nigeria is not in a good state right now. And everyone is seeking for the best. And, you know, different views, different opinions. So how do we orientate? What should we tell Nigerians to look for?
We have a short-term plan, right? And then you also have a long-term plan. A long-term plan is improve education. Just improve education sector. Just improve education. Improve it. If we run a knowledge-based society, some of these questions will be taken care of. In fact, we'll ask advanced questions. So no governor would come to you to promise you a good road in the 21st century. If that's solid...
No good governor
would come to promise you to...
In the 21st century will come...
promise you good road. These were promises of the 60s that keep recurring. You know, no good governor would come around to say, well, I'm going to construct road for you. This should not be the kind of discussion we'll be having in 2022. And now it has further dipped, because now payment of salary has become part of the weaponized instrument, you know, for election. You say, I'm going to pay salary, as if salary should be negotiated in the first instance.
There you go.
So once you strengthen the education sector, and then you make the country a knowledge-based society, that is the long-term
knowledge-based society.
Knowledge-based society at every level. At every point, knowledge be that. What exactly? How should this work? How can we make this work? These are the critical questions. I'm not a matter of where Baba Tisobe is. Baba has said this is the way it should be, and that's the way it should be. Somebody has said that this is the way it should be. No, if it's a knowledge society, if it's driven by knowledge, then some of these questions will be taken care of. Then in the short-term plan, of course, back on social media, keep asking the questions. What are you going to deliver? It is not just about Imilokan, right? Or Awalokan, or Lagbajalokan, and all that. That's not,
or Unifier.
Yeah, or now you have to be obedient. If I decide to be disobedient,
politically. I mean, by their own calculation of being obedient. If I decide to be disobedient politically, it may be as a result of not seeing those ingrains of the ideas of democracy in that candidate. If I already decide not to be articulated, it could also be the case that I've not found, you know, the picture of those ideas of democracy in this person who wants to be the president. So these are the questions I think people should be asking beyond being articulated, being obedient, or immunocoinism.
This has been a quite explosive one, mind-blowing, enlightening one. But to round it all up, elections are coming in 2023. Lots of things are happening in the country, insecurity, political questions all around. You know, people are questioning. In fact, supporters are attacking each other. No, your governor is this, is that. All sorts of things are rising up. What should be the top three most important things we should be looking out for as far as election is coming?
Like we said, let's question them. Question them and let's look out for competence. And let's then see also whether they understand the ideals of democracy. These are the three most important things that I think we should keep doing.
Oh, well, thank you very much for joining on this episode. That will be all. I wish we can go on and on, but this is how far we can go. Thank you, Mr. Leia, for joining me on this episode of The Insider. I hope you'll answer me when I call next time. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining in again this week, and I hope you had a good time. Please ensure to subscribe to this channel from wherever you listen to podcasts. Special thanks to my sound engineer, Tom Lucky Media. I am Kayode Sonny. Until I come your way next time, I say stay lifted.